They used to call him Little Stevie. Stevie Wonder, signed, sealed, delivered, I'm yours. I tried to use that line on the Mighty Aphrodite. I went up to her, signed, sealed, delivered, I'm yours. She said, insufficient postage. Ouch. All right, we are talking about artificial intelligence on the battlefield, robots in war. And we'll get back to our conversation with Eric Schiffer in a few moments. I'm just, one of the things I want to ask him is, you know, what would happen, thinking back to the American, the War of Independence, the Revolutionary War, what happens in the future to these burgeoning democratic groups, popular armed uprisings, when they're trying to fight for democracy and they're up against an army of robots? They wouldn't stand a chance. What happens to the Second Amendment and gun rights in America when the government has indestructible robots on their side? Interesting questions, I think, and I'll put those to Eric Schiffer, best-selling author, successful entrepreneur, and member of Mensa in mere moments. Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie. Eric Schiffer is chairman, CEO of Patriarch Equity, and serves as chairman of Reputation Management Consultants. Eric, how did you become interested in robots on the battlefield and artificial intelligence?
Well, I think since I was a young boy growing up in Silicon Valley, having started out when I was 9 years old, back in the late 70s, early 80s, with an Apple II computer, and just the progression and growth of technology, and my interest in programming. Back then it was machine language, 6502 machine language, which was the precursor of C and other languages. And I think the progression and my interest in getting into technology. One of my companies, ReputationManagementConsultants.com, handles both the online protection and reputation of many very successful individuals and business people, businessmen, politicians, large companies. But we also are involved on the cybersecurity side and cyber protection. And you know, you asked a really interesting question, which is, if we were to go back 200 years and look at how this nation was formed, what would happen today if a similar type of scenario occurred, in which our rights as individuals were very much suppressed, where taxation was out of control, where there was a king-like force at bay, and many people say that we may be embarking upon that with the rise of Donald Trump. And you have a scenario,
or some might argue that we're there now.
Yeah, right.
Never mind Donald Trump. Correct. We're there. We crossed that Rubicon a long time ago.
No question. And look, you don't need an act of war to launch drones, and so you don't need an act of war to launch what will be the further, I think, growth of drones into these autonomous weapons. And it gives someone in power, certainly in the presidency, the ability to start a war. And so if Congress will have to look at what is the role of robotics and artificial intelligence in all of this, because if you had someone that wanted to leverage and rapidly increase this area to enter into some type of armed force attack on another state, they could do it. The interesting argument that you posed about what would happen in these scenarios if again, a group of men and women that wanted to get their own liberty were to take action, how could they? There are ways. I mean, these devices are hackable still. Whenever you have a system, certainly a system that is largely one of an algorithm, and an algorithm that continues to expand and grow. There are vulnerabilities in any algorithm, but the challenge will be that these are ones that in which the collective brain power may rise to the level that supersedes some of the smartest humans.
What happens to the Second Amendment, where you have an AR-15, but the government has a Terminator, an army of Terminators?
Yeah. Well, I think it's a similar argument where I think it really depends on the system that you live in. I mean, if you're living in the United States, and you can make a similar argument today that the government has nuclear weapons, they have the capability to bring in the military if they wanted to. That doesn't mean they're going to execute upon it. But if you have someone that doesn't want to follow the rule of law, at least in the United States, or you have a department that has elected for a higher, on behalf of a higher, I think, collectively defensive and protective set of decisions to keep the state safe, to begin some type of privacy violation and to assert people's individual rights, and then to go further. And we've seen elements of that, and many people would say that there may be even greater elements of that going on today.
Right, but again, the democracy is when the government fears the people, and when the people fear the government, then you have of tyranny. But and currently there are something like 300 million guns in the United States. That's quite a deterrent for, you know, government to start thinking about running roughshod over the Constitution.
Yeah.
So again, and what happens to the Constitution and Second Amendment rights when the government has at its disposal an army of Terminators, and all we have, or all the citizens have, are, let's say, an AR-15 at the most?
Yeah. Well, I think the Constitution, the Second Amendment would, I think, be an act. Would stay enacted, but I think that it would lose much of its potency, I think it just would, especially when you consider the progression of weapons. I mean, some of the next level weapons will be, I think, in part connected to the Internet of Things for purposes of accuracy and precision and potentially even safety. And tracking capabilities for loss prevention, but then that same connectivity can be used by a government that certainly didn't have the best interests of its citizens involved. And I'm not suggesting that that's the case, but certainly, you know, people have said that those are concerns. And they could pose even more concerns if the wrong person is in power.
Well, given that, Eric, where then is the national debate? We're in the midst of a U.S. presidential election. Where is the debate? Why are people not being given an opportunity to discuss this, to vote on this? Is this a direction we want to head down?
Yeah, I think that the public, unfortunately, is largely uneducated about these concerns, and as we've seen in the election, there is a constant battle of over attention, and right now it seems to be going to the lowest common denominator, and issues of substance and concern for the country and even the economy are taking a backseat to what I would consider to be entertainment-driven arresting of attention and deflection into areas that don't necessarily serve the American people.
But even when they do discuss the issues, and Trump has released policy positions, and likewise Hillary Clinton, and they talk about defense spending, and Trump has talked about the need to increase, for example, you know, the number of warships in the Navy or the number of fighters in the Marine Corps. They're still talking as if it was 1975.
Yeah.
Nobody's talking about robots.
Right. Well, and I think that certainly as it relates to Donald Trump, I think that's there are many people who have made the arguments that he just is not as educated on the military as they would like him to be, and I think as he certainly gets more up to speed, he would realize that there is a growing movement in the Department of Defense to ensure that there are adequate defensive measures against foreign states that are actively investing in both land, sea, and air autonomous weaponry, and that is of a sophisticated nature, knowing that the wars of the future will be fought in that fashion.
Well, to be fair, I don't hear Hillary talking about it either. It's just simply not part of the discussion.
Yeah. You're right, and this is across the board, and I think that for reasons that I think map to what the data shows, they're following the will of the voters, and the polling data, which I think is pretty clear, and the things that people want to hear them talk about versus what they also need to hear.
Well, yeah, I think a large part of it is they don't want to talk about this because I don't quite frankly think, Eric, that most people would be on side with this idea, robots on the battlefield, fully autonomous weapons, making decisions of life and death based on some algorithm. I don't think most people would be on side. How about you?
It would scare most people. And even though they would equally be interested in the fact that there would be a lack of loss of life, I think it would scare most people, and I think it does. And so I don't necessarily think that it's one that will get some type of large-scale embrace. At the same time, it's a reality, and we have a duty to protect the state, and the state right now is losing in certain respects to investment by Russia and by China on the defense side in these areas. However, the advances that are going on in artificial intelligence in certainly in North America supersede what may be happening in some of these other countries. And so I think the Defense Department is attempting to try to find ways to partner with these civilian innovations and also potentially even purchase them.
Stephen Hawking and others have talked about artificial intelligence being and representing an existential threat to humanity. That at a certain point, zero point, the AI will become so intelligent that it perhaps might even consider humans to be superfluous or a threat to their own existence. What are the safeguards against that when you have these fully militarized robots?
Yeah. To put this into perspective, I want you to consider the ratio between one of the smartest men of the last 100 years. You look at Albert Einstein and you compare his intelligence to that of an ant, a simple ant. Imagine that ratio then being the case in which our smartest human is of the same ratio to, but in this case, an artificial intelligence algorithm / robot that has the greater intelligence. And that is the concern. And so what many in the artificial intelligence community have attempted to look at is some type of a platform that everyone could agree to. This has in part been led by Eric Schmidt, who was the former CEO of Google, and the chairman of its parent company, Alphabet, to rally really around several goals. One is that the AI should benefit the many, not just the few. And that includes the poor and not just the elite. that all R&D should be open, should be open source and responsible, and certainly socially engaged, and that developers of AI should establish best practices that are consistently committed to minimize risks and to maximize the beneficial impact. And you know, you mentioned Stephen Hawking. It's also Elon Musk, who is very concerned in this area. You also have Steve Wozniak, some really leading minds in the area of research and development, and even in the media, that have serious concerns about how this can get out of hand. And you're talking about a quantum event, and one that can tilt fairly quickly when it does happen. And we're not just talking, by the way, when you look at these autonomous weapons as large scale. They also can happen on a nanotechnological level.
Give me an example of that.
Well, I think a working example would be a small device that could enter the brain, that could potentially usurp parts of your brain that produces certain types of chemicals, could also influence your ability to make decisions. We've heard about stories in which certain viruses or parasites get involved, and it can literally affect your thinking. It can affect how you process, and your brain can literally get hijacked. This is a very similar concept.
Nano robots, sort of as a substitute almost for biological warfare or germ warfare. Now you're using nanotechnology.
Nanotechnology, that's right. Both for the purposes of small-scale warfare all the way to, I think, neurologic.
This is, I don't know, this is not something I could be on side with. I mean, I'm just not convinced that we can keep control of this. It's one thing to have artificial intelligence harvesting cabbage and, driverless cars. It's quite another thing to give them charge over a nuclear arsenal. It can only end badly, Eric, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and I share many of those concerns, and certainly have participated in many of these debates and will continue to, and because we still have a period in which we have a voice and we can shape the direction of where this is going. But the systems themselves are already in play. So we're talking about a cumulative element. It's not that the system isn't already in place, because it is.
Yeah, the horse has bolted the barn, and yet this topic isn't even on the radar of 99% of the population.
Well, and which is an unfortunate overall macro challenge that we have in this society, which is that we are still, and our narrative is still driven largely by the media today, and the media is largely a for-profit entity, and is driven by what gets attention and driven by certain sets of rules that don't necessarily always benefit society.
All right, we're going to open up the phone lines and take questions and comments. Eric, are you good for that? All right, we will do that right after the break as we continue to discuss a Terminator-type situation on the battlefield, artificial intelligence, robots at war. Back with my conversation with Eric Schiffer and your phone calls right after this on Coast to Coast. Here's Otis Redding and Shake. And this is The Four Tops, and baby, I need your love, and I don't care what anyone says, artificial intelligence can never do that. Can never reproduce that sound. I don't care what you say. No algorithm. No way, no how. We are talking artificial intelligence, robots on the battlefield with Eric Schiffer, and we'll get to your calls in mere moments. Just a reminder, at the top of the hour, we will do open lines for the last 2 hours of the program, and that's where you get to climb into the co-pilot seat and help fly the ship right on straight through till morning. Here's an interesting email I just want to share with you from Deborah. As I listen to you men, in quotes, talk about playing war and abiding by the rules and robotic game pieces in lieu of human presence, I can't help but shake my head and wonder, what the hell? It seems to me the whole purpose of boys playing army was to gain more of what the opposing side had, so as to line your own pockets with the greater wealth. So I ask you, why bother investing all kinds of money into giant game pieces that would only serve to destroy other game pieces, in addition to collateral damage, when both sides could keep those riches in their own pockets and just meet up for a weekly game night and play the traditional board game of Risk? Everything you guys are describing is nothing more than a bunch of little boys in big boy bodies playing with their army men. Remember, those with the little plastic parachutes attached? May the best player of Risk be the man for the week until the next game night. No one gets hurt. Loads of money stays in the pockets of the people where it belongs. Cut taxes big time. And you still have basically the same war as you described without the BS. Boys, well, I never could understand why you guys think fighting has to be the answer. All right, Deborah, thank you for that. Although war is not strictly a male paradigm, if you will. Plenty of women have engaged in war, too, needless to say. All right, just a reminder that you can join Coast to Coast's George Norrie for dynamic discussions on paranormal phenomena, conspiracies, and all things unexplained on Beyond Belief. There's a new episode available this coming Wednesday. Start watching immediately. Just go to beyondbelief.com. All right. Artificial intelligence, robots on the battlefield. It's coming. There's no stopping it. We have no say in the matter. And quite frankly, this discussion is absolutely chilling. Hope you'll be a part of it when we come back. Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us. Welcome back to Coast. Eric Schiffer is with us, best-selling author, a successful entrepreneur, member of Mensa. And we have on the wildcard line Gary in Santa Maria, California. Gary, you're up first. Go ahead, your question.
Thank you very much. I started artificial intelligence programming back in 1978-79 on a Bank of Apple II computers with a drive called Netstar, 32 megabytes. Megabytes, not gigabytes, with a price tag of about $6,000. Put two processors inside of an Apple. That board was called the Mill, a 6809 running alongside the 6502, doing stack manipulations, multiprocessing. Went to American Express, Advanced Technology Group, did the AI programming for TRW and the credit reports and Ross Perot and Electronic Town Hall. All right, that was quick background. I think, Eric, you're being artificially Pollyannish about when this is going to come down. I think the war has begun, except it's not a war between Democrats and Republicans. It's a war between the establishment and everybody else, establishment Democrats, establishment Republicans. If you look at Eric Schiff and his directorships of major corporations, you look at Wells Fargo Bank, you look at the Hillary Clinton emails. I write algorithms to spot data trends, patterns in data. Been doing it for 40 years. I'm getting a little bit good at it. What I see is when Wells Fargo lays off 5,100 people, and I can hardly find an establishment Democrat in that. Now, don't get me wrong. I didn't check with all 5,100 people. I don't have those resources. But just in my sampling, the ones that are losing their jobs, if you're a Teamster, if you're a truck driver, if you're getting inundated with nonsense paperwork, on-the-spot inspections, log inspections. Ask yourself, did you support Sanders or did you support Trump?
Okay, but let's just hold on for a second, Gary, because I want to bring this back to our discussion, which is about artificial intelligence on the battlefield.
The battlefield is the economic battlefield that we're in right now coming up to the election. Pokemon Go came out with their Bluetooth, their low-energy Bluetooth. That pinpoints you in the voting booth. when you vote, I know by a real-time clock in your smartphone and in a Bluetooth exactly to the inch using the Zigbee operating system of smart meters, low energy, and high energy Bluetooth that you're within 1 inch in that voting booth. That's on a real-time clock if it's a computerized voting machine. I take your geo position, I put it in the voting booth. I know exactly how you voted just by comparing the real-time GPS clock against the voting booth.
All right, Gary, this is all very interesting, but again, that's not what we're talking about. I mean, that would make for a great whole other show, and it's probably been done, and we'll do some more. But I want to focus on robots on the battlefield, but let Eric respond to what you said, and then we'll move on to some other callers.
He brings up some interesting points. I think I find it interesting that talking about this type of potential devastation in the future is Pollyanna. I would think it would be the opposite. I'm certainly concerned. The issue of economic warfare, I think, is one that is crystal clear. I mean, there's no question that there's a battle against the establishment across the board. I think the media establishment, institutional establishments, these large banks. I've been speaking out against what happened at Wells Fargo, and I think it's out of control. And you have many people who feel disempowered. They feel that the government isn't listening, and at least to their concerns, they may be listening, but certainly not to their concerns. And they want to do something about it. You saw what happened in England. The question is the solution that's being presented in Donald Trump the right way, or is that going to make things worse?
All right, Gary, thank you for the call. Again, interesting points, but I do want to focus on the topic at hand, and that is artificial intelligence on the battlefield. How does a civilian-run defense department interact with robots on the battlefield? Do the robots, I mean, is there a back door where humans can at a certain point, you know, have them stand down, connect?
Yeah, currently, Richard, that exists. So it's called being on the loop. So you have a situation where most of these devices now, most of these systems can be taken over on a human level. But there are some that have people saying that they can't be. So, for instance, they made reference to what exists on the border in South Korea, and certainly in Israel, with some of these devices that make the decision to kamikaze without the loop. But in most cases, you have the ability for humans to intervene. The future of autonomous weapons is limited human involvement.
So do you need generals? Do you need a Joint Chiefs of Staff?
Well, I think you need a macro, I think, defense strategy as to what you wish to embark upon in terms of investment, and what areas of weaponry will you allow to be autonomous, what areas will you not, what areas will you need to be for the purposes of defense because you're fighting other states that already have them.
Brian is on the wild card line. He's in Sacramento, California. Good morning, Brian. Good evening. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
How's it going? I just got a couple things to say. First of all, I really don't like any of you guys talk about artificial intelligence. You guys never make no sense. It doesn't make sense to any normal people. Let's just get this straight. There's some kind of demonic force that runs everything. You guys make artificial intelligence and don't even think you need to check it. It's already out there. We can tell. Everything we see on TV doesn't look right. Everything's all weird, and it's because what? Because you guys let it go already. I heard George R. Bell talking about this in 97. It's way already out there. It's goal-based, and guess what? The battlefield, we just found out, was where? Everywhere, the whole world. So you guys suck. You didn't do nothing good for any humanity whatsoever. That's all I have to say.
All right, Brian, appreciate that. I appreciate the input. Okay, well, did you want to add anything to that?
Let's talk about the truths that he laid out. I think one of the truths that he laid out is that artificial intelligence has existed since the 90s and before, but in a very limited way. So it had the ability to, there were certainly software programs to process information and to share information amongst other software programs. But again, it was very elementary. The types of artificial intelligence today is logarithmically more sophisticated. And when you mix it with big data and when you get just Moore's Law in place and the continual escalation of knowledge that's being captured and the ability to log into and tap this collective knowledge that now is available either online or in other forms, it allows for a much more powerful set of capabilities and certainly the ability to leverage that for the purposes of autonomous weaponry.
And I think, you know, the idea that, yes, it's been around and we've been talking about it for a long time. He mentioned 1997. Fine. But now things are reaching a critical point. It has arrived. It's here.
Yeah. It has arrived. It's being used. And so no one can deny that. And now it's a question of how will we continue to use it as a society and how will we protect it, against it being used for nefarious purposes to control parts of society in part or in full, purposes of dogma and mind control, either for religious purposes or just for power.
East of the Rockies, David is in Indianapolis. David, good evening, good morning, welcome to Coast.
Thank you, sir. You know, I would feel a lot better if these robots, this artificial intelligence, were out there as referees to keep an ethical, a moral order of some determined origin, rather than it seems like to adopt something for that 1% you were talking about earlier against the other 99%.
Would you really trust artificial intelligence to make moral decisions, David?
Well, in as much as you can initiate function into any anatomical creation, sure. But, you know, we're at a place now with every country has their basket of undesirables, and they all have the ability now to issue draft cards and start their wars and keep things in a defined area. Then it's just a simple matter of getting rid of the other 50% of the world if you go along with this one world concept, population reduction and stuff. Morality, you bet. You know, where are we without it?
Well, exactly. We're nowhere. And my grave reservation is you can't hand over, the great moral questions to be handled by robots that are using some algorithm or algebraic equation.
Well, perhaps they'll...
You can't program morality.
Well, isn't our morality basically wrote down in the philosophical and in religious books of the world already? And if there's an expansion of, you know, if you go to our Bible, what is spirit, what is flesh, if the morality is spirit, the algorithms, if properly set up, can lead to the divine.
Interesting point. Eric, do you want to weigh in on that?
It's a fascinating point, and it's an interesting point, and I think he's right that you could, in theory, program this. The challenge is what form of morality? I mean, is it, and who's defining the final definition of what is moral in each case? And then what happens if those super devices are hacked or taken over? And so, you can go down so many different branches. I think that to turn over our moral code and our ability to administer morality to something that could be vulnerable or could be smarter at some point than collective humanity could help to arise a whole host of additional problems for the human race. And so while it's an interesting thought, and I think one that whose intent is benevolent, it can have a lot of secondary problems.
West of the Rockies, David is south of Missoula, Montana, in the Bitterroot. David, good morning, good evening, welcome to Coast.
Good morning. I almost feel like I called in on the wrong night. I'm talking.
Why would you say that, David?
On about an 8-year-old cell phone, I've kind of divorced myself from a lot of the technology. My kids have been trying to get me to buy a smartphone, and I keep saying, I don't want a machine that is smarter than me. But to give you a little background, I'm an old guy. I'm a Vietnam War vet that went through the 1968 Tet Offensive. I saw a lot of my friends get hurt and killed in our conventional warfare that we had back then. And I got to tell you, the subject tonight just scares the living daylights out of me.
I'm with you.
I just don't see. I don't know. I'm about 180 degrees from the first gentleman to talk to from Santa Clara, I believe. I am not technologically adept, but I have had a lot of life experience. And I just don't see. I'll tell you, your conversation tonight brings me back almost to thinking about, you remember the movie, I think it was 2001 or 2010 or something like that. When
with Hal the computer.
Hal the computer. And I don't see how we can put enough safeguards into these types of systems to where they can actually have morality.
David, I'm with you, and unfortunately we are out of time, but I am with you 100%. As I said earlier, Eric, this can only end badly.
Well, we will have many more, I think, things to discuss as this technology continues to progress, and the debate will get that much more conflict-laden and that much more fascinating.
Well, I hope so. I hope there's going to be a debate, but it sounds like it may already be too late. The genie's out of the bottle, and there really isn't much more to be debated. I wish that weren't the case, but I think we've come to the dance a little too late.
The dance is certainly underway, but I don't think it's the last chance at being able to control and our fate as humans.
Hope not. I sincerely hope not. Eric Schiffer, a great pleasure. Thank you. I've enjoyed this conversation. All right, open lines. 2 hours of the best in late-night talk radio right here on Coast to Coast AM. Richard Serrett filling in for George Norrie. Stay with us.